Welcome back to another Rich Martin podcast. And today I get to speak to a really good friend of mine, Rich Lewis. And me and Rich have gone back many years. You'll hear it in the podcast. And really and truly, you might not know his name. You might not have even ever heard of him. And that is part and parcel of what I'm trying to do with podcasting, really, is to try and get conversations that maybe you wouldn't necessarily be privy to, but that could give you great building tools for the churches and communities that you're helping to build. And so when I knew I was going to be doing a whole load more podcasts, I thought, who could I get? And Rich Lewis was definitely on it for a number of reasons. He really understands church building around Europe, and you'll hear from his story. He's been involved in a lot, and he is really comfortable in what he's trying to build. And what I'd love to be able to do is to share that with you. And so we talk about all sorts, transition, what that looks like. We talk about how he's building church in a very, very secular nation, Sweden, and what that looks like. Hey, if you're a church builder anywhere in the world, particularly if you're in Europe, hopefully this is going to bless and encourage you. So why don't we jump straight into my conversation with Richard Lewis. Well, I am here with a good friend, Rich Lewis. The two Riches in a room, which is amazing.
I know.
I've just thought that now. And Rich has been a really good friend for many years. He comes from an amazing city, or was working in an amazing city when I met him, called Birmingham, United Kingdom, which is the city I was born in, Rich. I don't know if I've ever told you that, but I was born in
Birmingham. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I've got Brummie roots and born in Birmingham Hospital and lived there for a couple of years. But Rich and his wife, Hannah, they are pastors in Sweden now. And we want to tuck into this journey. Rich does not have a Swedish accent, although you might have picked it up, like Joey Barton, who played for a football club in France. And he did a French interview once with a French accent with English. Okay. Maybe you can just put a Swedish accent on the whole way through. But you're very much English. Yeah. And your wife, Hannah, is Swedish. And you've got four amazing kids. And so I just wanted to jump on and chat to you all about church building, specifically in the context you're in. And so massive thanks for being with us, Rich.
Oh, my pleasure. Let's do it. Let's go.
Yeah. Give everyone, I know a bit about your story, but obviously most people listening are not going to have a clue. You're not like an Instagram famous name. I'm sorry to say that, Rich, but
I know. Shame. Such a disappointment.
Yeah. But it would be really good. Just give listeners a kind of overview of your journey, of how you've ended up in Sweden, pastoring a church, which is called Hope, Church of Hope. And it's in a place called Umeå. Is that right? Umeå.
Yeah. So Umeå. The A at the end is right up north in Sweden.
Yeah. So tell us a bit.
10 hours drive from Stockholm.
Right. Because Sweden is ginormous, is what I've realized.
Yeah. Yeah. So the journey actually getting to Sweden starts in a tiny uber charismatic church in Watford, where I kind of really dedicated my life to Jesus, I guess. And why it starts there is there was a lady who had a grandson in a big Swedish church in Uppsala called Word of Life, where Ulf Beckman was the pastor. They went to one of his kind of preachers in London and brought back a video VHS of Ulf Beckman's teaching.
Wow.
And a 17-year-old new saved me got this VHS, and it was like healing, deliverance, authority. And I don't know how many people know Ulf Beckman, but he was like this crazy Viking Swede. He screamed a lot. He preached a lot. He prophesied a lot. And I'd never heard anyone preach or teach like that, biblically based with energy. You know, and then the missions that they did. Anyway, cut a long story short, I thought already then that ministry, full-time ministry, was something I wanted to pursue. So I moved to Sweden at 18 after my A-levels at the Bible school there. And then I joined an internship called New Generation, which is when we met, 15 years ago, whenever we met, around that time. I moved back to England after studying theology for a bit. And then in England, the New Generation for 4 years, which is a parachurch organization that worked with prayer and evangelism in schools. During that time, when I became the national leader there, my whole time was focused on raising money for a Christian charity. And I realized, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be a fundraiser for Christian ministry. I want to do pastoral ministry. So then I actually joined my local church, which was a complicated story, but Elim, that became Free Methodist, that was Renewal in Solihull, and worked there for a couple of years. And there was a failed transition there that you know a lot about, between a good friend of mine, John Andrews, and Dave Carr, the pastor there. When that transition didn't work, we were going to plant a church with ARC in Reading. And then we were introduced to ARC through a pastor called Andrew McCourt, who now is in America, leading Bayside Church somewhere, I think, there. Yeah. But he was in Ireland at the time. We got the approving, we're going to plant. And at the same time, my wife was heavily pregnant with our fourth.
We've skipped over, but you must have met her in Sweden.
Sorry, yes, met her in Sweden during New Generation internship.
Okay, so you were in leadership position after a wife, were you? That's a whole different story, right?
No. We met at 19 years old.
Oh, there we go. There's no scandal to be had here.
No. I am 10 days older, but I think that's
That's
okay.
Allowed.
Yeah, so we met, we got married in Sweden. We got married at 22, and then we moved together to build New Generation.
Okay.
Excuse me. Yeah. And then when we moved to England, we had four kids quite back to back. So when
you're saying she was pregnant with the first child when you fourth
when,
child
when ah. yeah when the transition at Renewal was just fell apart and we were about to plant a church with ARC in Reading, which is my hometown. The day Brooke was born, Hannah's mum passed away. So she had cancer, was in remission, and then very quickly, within 24 hours, passed away the same day my youngest, Brooke, was born. Then Brooke got sepsis 2 weeks after and almost died. So we were in intensive care, grieving the loss of Hannah's mum, and I'm having to ring her dad and say, Brooke is in intensive care, we might lose her. We were like, this is not a healthy time for us to plant a church. Grief, you know, very close to death. I think with just knowing how Hannah's journey had been post-pregnancy as well, we just were like, this is too vulnerable a period of time in our lives to plant a church. Mm. So we moved from Birmingham to Reading into my parents for 2 years with four kids, including a newborn, which is not recommended. But we were young, dumb, and wanted to build God's kingdom. In that time period, I went to meet Andrew Cherry, recommended by Dave Niblock, because he just planted a church. And I wanted to hear how we'd done it. You know, I was still pursuing ARC, but we're just like, I'm probably going to get a job for a year or two, just settle down. And he said, Hillsong are going to plant in Reading. And then I was like, oh, crap. he said, you need to meet Chris Mickelson. Fast forward again, met Chris Mickelson. They were looking for someone to do comms and media. I was like, maybe this is just a good stopgap and maybe we can see what happens. I was in Hillsong, ended up being in Hillsong for over 8 years. I did around two roles, head of communications, which for about 2 years. And then the rest of my time, I was one of the pastoral team in Guildford, like the assistant pastor or whatever. And then I led Guildford right up until this summer when we moved to Sweden. The church we're in, just to summarize, is the church Hannah grew up in. So I preached here every year for like the last 10 years. And then the pastor here did our wedding. Hannah's family here, her dad's here, her brothers are here. So we've moved to the city she grew up in and the church she grew up in with a long establishment of relationships here. And the pastor had been asking us to move here for about 10 years, on and off. And we were always, you know, in all honesty, I was like, why the heck am I going to move to a small town in Sweden when I'm working for Hillsong in London? Sadly. So, but that was the way I honestly thought. Pandemic, like for a lot of people, shifted that. And we wanted a different type of lifestyle. We wanted to build church in a different way. Not that Hillsong was wrong. We just didn't fit that mold anymore, I think, was the way I definitely felt. And then we decided to move all six of us from a very great salaries, stability, healthy church, which it was, and then into a new beginning, which we've been here now since the summer.
Wow. Wow. I mean, yeah, you have skipped this huge stuff in that journey, Rich, which I'm sure that other people are listening thinking, oh, it's not just me. Other people have got crazy, wacky journeys, you know, like that.
Yeah.
That takes so many twists and turns, which I always have loved it. I think, you know, I've spoken to you previously before about transition, and you have been through multiple transitions, transition of, you know, you referenced it there, leadership transitions that didn't work, that found yourselves transitioning from a city with kids. Do you know, and it is unusual to have four kids in the ministry that you're doing and to raise that, then transition from Hillsong and transition of moving on. Also, you know, for those that don't know, you were at Hillsong when the big famous Hillsong kind of implosion happened of Brian and Bobby stepping away whole thing. And so your transition was also in amongst major transition that was going on. You know, you didn't transition from Hillsong during a season of absolute, you know, thriving peacefulness in that church. You know, God's good, hey, good things are happening now and so on. But you know, it was all turmoil going on. I suppose my question is, what have you learned? You've got huge amounts to say on it, but what are your kind of takeaways from transition? You're basically an expert, is what I call.
Oh, wow. Well, I think there is no black and white in transition. Mm. So, you know, I think for me, a defining thing of how to navigate these seasons was I felt like God always doesn't clearly show you what to do, but he will always tell you how to behave.
Brilliant.
Does that make sense?
Brilliant.
And I had to cling on to that because I think there is emotions that go up and down. There are complex situations where there is no black and white. You've got the tensions of honoring one partner and then standing up for who you are with integrity, but being generous. So I think humility, and if you don't love the people and want the best for them, then you're going to be on dangerous ground. Mm. So one of the habits that I had to do in these things and every transition was, I think, and you know, it sounds cliche, but when I'm mulling over frustrations, choose to pray for the person.
Oh, what a great word.
Do you know what I mean? Because it sounds cliche. Did I do it every time? No, but I did it a lot. Because I was like, I kept thinking this, okay, I'm frustrated. The transitions always cause frustration. Mm. So that's, you know, on both sides, any side. So what are you going to do with that frustration? Are you going to believe that once I'm out on the other side, then I'm going to be the dream Christian I've always wanted to be, and I'm going to be filled my dream thing? Mm. I just felt like the challenge kept being, I need to live in a way right now in the mess, in the lack of clarity, that I dream of living in the future. Mm. And I think it takes away that when I get free from, when this transition happens, then I'll be able to live the way I want to, lead the way I want to. And I think as much as possible, you have to think, I want to lead with humility and love. And when there is frustration, pray and bless the people. I know that's a cliche answer. I think the other thing is, the advice I got was, get ugly quick.
Nice.
And what I've tried to live that out, where it's very different from, I've had very different roles. And the transition that we are doing currently, I'm transitioning into the finalities of coming into the lead pastor role. The other ones, I was much more, I watched transition happen around me.
Right.
And had to make a decision based on circumstances I did not control.
Wow.
And I think one of the things the first transition and renewal taught me was, it doesn't always go how you think it's going to go. Yeah. I lost the naivety of thinking good things happen to good Christians.
Yeah.
These things are messy. And because they're messy, the biggest danger is unmet expectations.
Yeah.
So to try and communicate as much detail as possible where you have any say or control. A lot of the transitions, I had no control, no say whatsoever. They made a decision. Yeah. I reacted accordingly. Now I'm in a transition where I am directly involved. And so it's up to me to get as much information and clarity and push very uncomfortable conversations, because time doesn't make it better. I have to push uncomfortable questions, because it's almost like you're too scared to ask because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But if you don't, then it went as much clarity as possible. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but
that's really helpful. The just as you're talking, I'm thinking I've done a couple of transitions, and one of the things that I've always took away when you're on the other side, when you're not in the driving seat like you are a little bit more now in the transition you're going through, I've always, like, me and my wife have always said, like, God's given us a conviction and a revelation. It's wrong of us to think that that's going to be on the rest of the group. And so you start talking about some of your future. You start talking about, you know, maybe moving on or what the transition could look like, particularly moving on. I've moved on from a couple of places, and people look and going, I just don't get it. And rather than me having to try over-explain, you know, like over-define, put all of it, it's like, they're not going to get it because they don't have the revelation. And the people that have handled me the best are the ones. I've had a friend a couple of years ago when I moved on from Bradford, went, Rich, gotta be honest, I do not get it, but I love you and I like you. And I was like, perfect. That's exactly it. Like, we can still carry on. And so, it's amazing what you've done.
But I think on that as well, the humility of knowing where you are in the organization is really important. So at Renewal in Solihull and at Hillsong, I was not invited to be involved in those transition talks because of my role. Yeah. And it's also not my role to change Hillsong.
Yeah.
Or another church. And I think I had to learn that really and go, actually, I have opinions about things, but they're just opinions.
Yeah.
I don't have a position. And to go, well, I might have a different opinion. I need to, you know, opinions can also be values. Values are more deep-seated than opinions, I think. And ultimately, we try to make decisions based out of values rather than opinions. But even the values, different organizations and different people have different values. And if I'm not invited to the table, it's not my position or right to tell them to have my values.
Yeah.
And I think that's important too, because I think we live in an age where everyone thinks, well, my opinion and values are as important as everyone. It's not. It depends on the context and your position in the table.
Yeah. I know. And I mean, over the last few years, I've learned personally is that God's not moved by my opinion. Even though it's biblically grounded often and it's really good.
it's really important. Really good.
He's moved by faith, hey? Like, that's what moves him. Like, that's the currency. Yeah. It's the currency of faith in heaven. And I'm not saying opinions don't have faith in it, but I've definitely learned that. Can I jump straight into your church that you're at now, which is really special?
Yes, please.
I think, give us some context of the city, the town, city that you're in. How big is it? What kind of dynamic is it?
Yeah, so the town, in Sweden, they have villages and cities. They don't have towns. So it's called a city in Swedish. But it is the north of Sweden. It's probably about 150,000 people, but 35,000 of those are students.
Amazing.
So one of the better universities in the country. It's in a part of Sweden that we call Norrland, which is the north of Sweden. So we're up north, and it's like maybe the biggest, well, it is the biggest city in the northern part of Sweden. So Sundsvall wouldn't like that, but no one cares about that city. So it's beautiful nature, but a lot of people move here because of the university. So we chose a place that people would move to, not move from.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And I know from our previous chats, not on podcasts, but just over the phone, is that you've been part of building life-giving churches, you know, Renewal in Solihull, Birmingham, that is a life-giving church. You know, it's
definitely
a lot of that. Hillsong and what they've brought into the mix brilliantly of doing things well and being a life-giving platform. But you've also had this deep resurgence back to kind of like the way of Jesus. Not that the two are in conflict, but how do we create disciples and not just lean too heavily on a platform ministry? And there's lots to be said there, but you know, I think the two can work together. How are you doing that in this new context that you're in? How are you, or are you? I don't know. I don't know if that's what you are. Yeah.
No, I mean, huge question. I think I felt distinctly when I said to the board, when they asked me, what are you going to do here? What's your vision? And I was like, I don't know. I felt clearly, do not come with a blueprint. And I did not want to come, and I didn't just want to come with things I don't want to do.
Right.
So I think that smells of like, you haven't really processed what you left, right. You know? I knew this. I didn't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Hillsong was a phenomenal learning experience, and I've taken so much from that. I don't want to overreact. And I think the discipleship and the leadership that we've had doesn't need to be mutually exclusive.
Amazing.
So I think if I'm honest, I am still slowly figuring out and letting it slowly emerge what exactly and how we're going to do that. So we've started to get, I think, a bit of clarity through, okay, well, what do we want to do? We want to be a praying church. Okay, well, what does that look like? We want to have clear pathways for people to grow in discipleship intentionally, but I don't want to create a spiritual elite group of people that only ever talk about silent retreats, fasting, and solitude. I want to be able to reach your average bloke that likes a beer at the weekend, watches football or hockey or whatever, and still wants to grow in their relationship with Jesus. I want to reach non-Christians. And I've thought of three rings. You've got core, you've got connected, and you've got the periphery. And I think each one of those rings is equally important. And a church that has clear channels to help people into the core. What do I mean by core? A core is not how many hours you serve in church, but it is that discipleship, apprenticeship of Jesus that is, you have my whole heart. Not perfectly, but I've laid everything else down. I'm trying to follow you to the best of my ability. So we just put, you know, prayer meetings in. We talk about fasting once a month. And then, you know, we are a modern expression of church. And with that comes what? A complex kids ministry that we have to build. A worship team that I want to sound good and not sound awful. So we need to, you know, all of this stuff gets added on automatically because of the modern model that we have. And in that, not trying to burn out volunteers, stopping people from serving every single week, trying to have relationships. So I think the church packet that I'm in, which is a modern expression, comes with certain requirements. Am I happy with all of those at the minute? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But you're not throwing baby out with bathwater. You've not gone in and gone, right, what we're going to do is, you know, we're no longer sitting in rows. We're doing circles. And, you know, I'm going very radical, right?
No, definitely not. Because I think those of us who've been in the Christian bubble too long, you know, there's too many people that are worried about the type of church that, say, a Hillsong was or an Elevation was or is or whatever. And that's kind of like, let's just not get stuck in what the bubble thought. If we just focus on, okay, your average guy or girl in the city that you're in, what's the best way to reach them? And whatever that is, let's do that.
But that's deeply wrapped up in how you're wired. I suppose I'm pushing you towards answering this question. Do you still buy into as it is in the leader, so it is in the church?
Yeah, 100%. As in, if I don't model it, it won't happen.
That one, but as much as also your personality, how you're wired.
Oh, Oh, yes and no. Yes and no. My gosh, I think we don't need any more benevolent dictatorships.
Right. Which would dictate, this is how I'm wired, so we're going to do it like this.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think we need socialism either. So I do believe in the leader should shape and form something. But I think there needs to be, because without that, I think it's chaos. Like, it's just, you know, like you end up having people that are making decisions and they honestly know nothing about what it means to build a local church. And if you delegate totally the vision and leadership of the church, what are you actually doing? You've just got a community of people with no leader. So I think we do need leadership, but I think as well, it should be formed and shaped by the community, by the individuals in it and by the city around it.
So let me dig into that then. So, you know, there's this Pew Research, which says that Sweden, I'm going to read it, says that Sweden is one of the least religious countries in the world. Only about 2 in 10 Swedes say that religion is somewhat important or very important, compared with, for example, 7 in 10 Americans. So yeah, with this idea...
Thank
that
God for that.
Because it's a whole different animal, isn't America, for sure.
Yeah.
But with that, you know, you're in this unreached people group. You've got a church in a city that's got huge, I guess, progressive values with a big student population, right? And Gen Zs that are there. How is it that you have, how are you embracing that? Because it's, you know, it's not London that you're in, right? Or
no, it's not.
So taking that point, which is, so you're wired in one way, but you're having to learn the rhythm of the city or the way that the people are in the sea. How does that look? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so Umeå is, you know, one of the socialistic strongholds of Sweden. You know, stronghold, I don't mean that in the spiritual sense. I just it's like, it's been super liberal up here.
Okay.
And it has been so liberal, so aggressively liberal for so long, we are very much pre-Christian in the culture.
Wow.
So, you know, when you say it, you know, it is, but I could tell you the aggressiveness against Christianity that was in Sweden in like the early 2000s is not here now. And it's been very interesting because there's actually a lot more openness to spirituality, I would say. So the openness to spirituality is huge. So, you know, I can't tell you, both here and in Guildford, a little bit different. The amount of young adults, people were telling me they were having spiritual experiences on mushrooms or weed or whatever. And then looking for Jesus because they'd had a trip or something like that. That was just kind of became like a regular thing. I was kind of surprised by it in the beginning. Right. But they're just, you know, spiritually open. And a lot of people thinking about Buddhism, if that's how you say it, you know, thinking about different spiritualities. And I've actually found... There is not in the younger generation an anti-Christian feeling. There is an openness looking for genuine spirituality. And I don't know if you want to think this is too sensitive. I don't mean it to be, but my kids were in secondary schools in England and we were having conversations every single week about LGBTQ because they were seeing trans kids. There was LGBTQ clubs at every school during lunch. I don't know if that's being close to London or not, but it was just a conversation that we were repeatedly having because it was right in their face all the time in a school in Epsom outside London. Nothing is visible here in the same way.
Okay.
And my kids are 14 and 13. And I've asked them, what do you think the difference is? It's like, because that's interesting that we've just... It's just not, it doesn't exist in the schools. So I've asked them, are there gay kids in your school or you know trans kids in your school? Because it definitely was something we talked repeatedly about because it was just in the face all the time. And they were like, I don't know. I don't think so. They're not at a Christian school. They're at a state school, you know? And so what's interesting in Swedish is they pushed this agenda for 25 years, long, 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 long before the UK started doing it. And now it almost feels like you do you, boo. It's kind of like there's just so much freedom if it's just not a fight here.
Wow.
Now, we do need to clarify. I regularly get asked in our stance on homosexuality and all that kind of stuff, because it's almost a given. If you're a nice person, then you are pro-gay. And if you're a bad person, you're not. So we have those conversations all the time with people who are asking about our church. But even then, the conversations are not, I don't feel like that people are surprised by our stance or attack us or about our stance. It's just, there's a higher curiosity around spirituality, I'd say.
And is that, and so with that kind of like outlook, not outlook, but with that kind of atmosphere that you're building in, and it's not, you know, what's London, 7-8 million people now, like in amongst it, very, very transient. How have you adapted some of your building? How have you adapted some of your church methodology to reach this people group? What does that look like?
Oh, well, I don't know if we've done that is the honest answer. I mean, I'm a couple of months in. I would say the predominant way I would want to do that is through modeling and through preaching at the minute. I wouldn't necessarily say that we have an amazing culture of breaking into the community as kingdom bearers of salt and light. I think we probably have a model that's a bit more, at the minute, entertaining Christians.
Okay. And you want to shift that?
Yeah, 100%. And I don't want to, and I don't know, honestly, you know, we have these grand ambitions, right? But like I said, there's the periphery, there's the normal bloke, and then there's the core. And I think you're going to have all people in your church at the same time. And in some way, it's just a celebration for some people to make it through church, church service.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got to go, well done, mate. Yeah. Well done. And then there's other people. So you've got to measure. I think as a pastor, I don't want to create an elite group of people where I bash other people around the head. If you're dealing with a whole bunch of complex situations in your marriage, your life, your health, your mental health, and then all I'm interested in is an elite group of people, I just don't think that's how Jesus operated either.
So that takes time to build. You know what I mean? That's going to take time to get that. You can't do that overnight, right?
No, well, one of our pillars at the minute is we want to help you with your lifelong journey with Jesus.
Right.
So we've really crafted those words because I think it's in Swedish, it's livslång vandring, and vandring is more close to pilgrimage than it is journey or walk, if you know what I mean.
Okay, nice.
And I think what we want to do is we want to go, hey, we're a church that understands that life is long and it's going to go up and it's going to go down and you're going to have seasons. And we want to be a place, wherever season you're in, that we're helping you take your next step.
Amazing.
Because it's not always, you're not always going to bear fruit. Sometimes you're going to have branches cut away. You're not always going to be happy and prosperous. You're going to suffer and you're going to grieve. And we want to help you in that season too.
Amazing.
And so that's, I think, you know, discipleship for me is not just about a course. I really want to zoom it out and go, I want you, and I want us to think about your whole life. And any time you spend in our church, we want to contribute to a lifelong journey with Jesus.
Wow.
So that's, I think, how we're trying to frame it, rather than let's get another conference with a whole load of other people in it and take a picture.
It's so good, Rich, because you've got a really rich, deep history of going through various different things, and to be able to see you kind of just get into a seat, working out what that now looks like and how you can move it forward is really exciting. Talk to us. I'm always aware most of the people I reckon that listen or watch what I put out there are part of churches that aren't mega or big, that are in unknown, complicated towns, villages, cities around Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
With names that are difficult to pronounce. but don't have this kind of high flying church experience. It's often quite mundane. It's often quite lonely, I think it's too strong a word, because I don't meet many lonely pastors. I meet people who's like, hey, like I've got to build with what's in front of me. How do you keep yourself, or how have you found keeping yourself fresh in what would be dictated as a small town mentality, or a smaller thinking than a New York, a Paris, a Milan, a London? How have you done that?
Small thinking is not the area. It's in here.
Right.
You know. So I've worked in Hillsong. There was a staff of at one point, you know, over 100. I don't know what they're at now, you know, but a lot of people, and I had staff team in Guildford.
Yeah.
At its biggest, it was five in Guildford, but then, you know, you work with a wider staff team, and Guildford was, I don't know how big, you know, varies pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, but easily over 1,000, 1,500 at its biggest point, hundreds of volunteers. And now I'm working in a church with a Sunday attendance, you know, probably about on a big day, 150 at the minute. And I can tell you what, same problems. Always too little money, always too little volunteers. Yeah. The bigness and the smallness, I don't know. I think I didn't move from London to a small city in the north of Sweden because I wanted to do just big. Right. So the size thing doesn't bother me, but I've never stopped dreaming of what could be.
Yeah.
And so I don't really see that big of a difference for how I'm working. It's like, my gosh, it's the same thing. I've got to find good leaders, and there's not that many of them that want to do this volunteer thing in church. And so I almost work in exactly the same way. Got to find leaders, got to invest in relationships, you know, your coffees and lunches with people. How to not, and then the routine of writing messages. I don't know, there's actually a huge amount of similarities, but the internal vision and dream that I have is that what motivates me.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's an answer.
Yeah,
I think practically.
Yeah. Give us some practicals. How do you still lift your head up and out of your situation?
I think I felt challenged by God. Sounds so cliche, I don't even really want to say it, but I think it's the honest answer. To fast once a month.
Awesome.
To make, and it's not, you know, that's probably some people like you need to do more than that or whatever. But
is it Netflix, Rich?
No, like a real food fast. Just 24 hours, and sometimes even less than 24 hours, you know, from evening to evening, depending on what activities and stuff. But to carve out time to seek God about what he wants to do. Now, we're praying every week. You know, we've got prayer meetings and a personal thing. But that's definitely one thing, because I'm like, I've walked away with some very inspirational big leaders, right, that I love and look up to. And as I walked away from, I felt the conviction of the Holy Spirit that was like, stop looking to be told what to do by another leader.
Mm. Wow.
Get inspired, but don't look for affirmation.
Yeah.
You've got to lead out of the voice in the inside that you believe's God's voice.
Awesome.
So I think carving out time to do that regularly, systematically, is what I'm trying to do, because I've spent hours like every other pastor. What's Bridgetown doing? What's Elevation doing? What's Hillsong doing? What are they doing? What's their vision statement? How have they written it? How are they doing groups? How are they expressing this? What's their graphics look like at the minute? And I mean, it kind of helps to a part, but I mean, your brother said this, you know, when we work together at Hillsong, he said, the one thing Hillsong doesn't do is look at what other churches do.
Didn't need to.
So there's a part of me which I felt like, great, look at what other people do. But honestly, with this, going back to this blueprint and not knowing, I don't look at a church now and say, they're doing everything I want to do. I want to be like them. I think that's a bit sad, if I'm honest.
Yeah, we've seen, haven't we? We've lived in amongst some of that thinking and seen the fruit of it. And the fruit is, it's not that great. It's like a chip. It's like going on a cheap Chinese website and buying the Rolex watch or whatever it might be,
bad copy.
Yeah, it's like, it's all right, but everyone knows, you know, it's not it. But finding the unique essence really is what you're tapping into. Do you think there's an age thing in that? Do you think, not saying you're old, but do you know, like, you're not 21 anymore?
No, I'm 39.
Do you think there's like a maturing in that, which is like, okay, I feel like I'm ready now?
I would hope to say there's a maturing, Lindy, you know, in this journey that we've done. I really hope there's a maturing. I would say yes. You know, what's interesting is watching what your internal drivers are, right? Right. You know, like I was so driven as a younger person, you know, when we were all youth pastors growing up, you know, it was like, we're going to build the freaking biggest church. There's no demand. We're going to be authors. We're going to, and anyway, it was just like this testosterone, ego, insecurity masked with, oh, it's for God. Yeah, of course it's for God. He gets all the glory. But there was sincerity in it, and there was immaturity in it. And then God called us in it, and we're still in it, you know, but along the way you get stripped down.
Right.
And I would say, I don't want to lose my hunger. I don't want to leave my passion to, I want to build something that I'm proud of.
Yeah, great.
I want it to be excellent.
Yeah.
Like still like Chef's Table, that show on Netflix, you know, right. Like the story of these Michelin star chefs that like there's a one in Sweden that really spoke to me in particular. He moved from Stockholm, the big city, into the middle of nowhere just because he wanted to create something beautiful with local ingredients. And it's still like, I want to create something stunning.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be average.
Yeah.
Like, I want it to be beautiful, but I don't want to kill myself, my family, my marriage, or volunteers. I want it to glorify God. And I think, I remember chatting with a mutual friend of mine, Dan Blythe, and I was saying, you know, Dan, like, I just feel like I don't care now if no one ever knows my name, if I never write a book that's a New York Times bestseller. It sounds even sad to say it.
Yeah.
I just want to live a great life and build the best church I can build.
And that's, and then, when you say that, that sounds so biblical.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I know. But we, the models that we've been part of, like, you know, what attracted me to the beat, you know, there's a part of it that you're like, oh my gosh, you know, and honestly, like I said, they asked me to be here for 10 years and I couldn't even imagine it because I was like, ugh, small, unknown, you know, gross. But I think the church, we need more churches everywhere to be as good as they possibly can. And some will be famous. Great. That's always going to happen. And some leaders will be more influential. Great. But let's, I don't know. I just want to do my bit where I am and make it as good as possible. And if that influences other people outside our church, cool. But it's not the aim.
Yeah. No, I love, Bill Johnson has a great line around money. He says, ministry doesn't make you money unless it does. And then like, you can interchange the word money with like, ministry doesn't give you fame unless it does. Ministry doesn't create you, you know, known names unless it does. The point being that you just made there, which is for some it does, and there's no rhyme or reason to that, and there's no kind of like, and there's no kind of button that you got to pull or press. And actually, the ones who are integrous, who tell you that it's come their way, it's an absolute nightmare when it's come their way, because it distracts and it, you know, all the other stuff that has been embroiled up into it. Let me finish with this question, Rich, because I'm aware of time. It kind of touches on the last bit there. What are your thoughts on building the church in Europe? Like, what are you seeing working? What do you think's moving on? What could improve? You just touched on a bit there, which is, I still want to do it well, which is a very, very European kind of like, we want to do it well because we're just known for doing church, and it's not done well. But what that well looks like is maybe a new expression. But what other things do you see?
Oh man, I will give you thoughts, but I think this is something we're very much wrestling with. I still believe in a, you know, one of the things I speak to a lot of friends that have left church, and a lot of people say they like about our church, is the worship experience. Mm. Now, I think there is something in the worshipful experience that I don't want to throw away, because I think there's a lot of freedom, there's beauty in it. Mm. And I do think that worship is an important thing. Mm. And that does mean it comes with a complexity around it. because you've got to do that well. And then you get into tracks versus non-tracks, music and band and quality and what's, you know, so I don't want to go too much into that. I think as well, every church is going to have to navigate how they relate to digital. And I honestly believe, you know, I don't want to be a famous pastor on social media, but I've come to the conclusion that if we are not aggressively pursuing a digital presence, doing that well through video, we are going to become irrelevant. I think the objections and the aims of that needs, well, for me, in my own opinion, is to reach your people, to add value to your city and your people. And then whatever happens, happens. I think the motivations should be add value where you are, not try and be famous to people you're not connected to. And then discipleship and groups and home groups, whatever you want to call them, and deeper discipleship and, you know, encouraging people on that way. Honestly, I don't know how I'm going to wrestle with that or finalize that. We have groups that meet regularly here, and I don't know whether I'm satisfied with that. I think we can't force people to be disciples of Jesus. We need to at least have clear ways where it's very easy to progress in a deepening relationship with Jesus. And I think we need to facilitate that, knowing that some will and some won't, but we keep moving and giving regular opportunities. So we are doing Bible memory verses for every teaching series we do.
Right.
So I want people memorizing scripture. You know, so we're just trying to sow in these simple things say, hey, we're going to encourage you to memorize scripture. We're going to encourage you to get up early and pray. We're going to encourage you to fast. So I don't think there is a solution. I don't think there is a ministry or a program that is the solution. I think the Church of Jesus Christ is an organic group of people on a spiritual journey together. Mm. And the more we try and put a clean, this is the program, it might work in one church, it might not work here. So I think it's a wrestle, and it needs to be a dynamic, organic thing that changes over time. So unfortunately, I don't have crystal clear answers.
But what I love is, you know, I don't think in crystal clear answers. I always say to my wife when we're discussing things, I'm like, don't forget, Jules, like, I'm more about smells and atmospheres and you know what I mean, what's that cooking type feel, rather than you know, the exact science of it. And so I think what you've just described, I think I'm really excited about it. I think there's a lot of great things that have tumbled out off the back of the pandemic and off the back of us realizing there isn't a cookie cutter model to do it. And God's raising up people like you and Hannah and a whole heap of others to build church. And what, you know, what the richness of the European community, and I keep banging on about Europe. If you're listening from America, we love you as well, but it is a very, very different place. The richness of our history and what's happened over the years is really special. And that's still well and truly in the communities that we're reaching, which is Christianity. It's not just dead and buried, it's well and truly alive, and it's still doing great work, and being able to breathe all over that is really good. So Rich, I'm really excited. How do people find out more about your world? You're on Instagram, but I don't, you know, tell people
you don't want to. No, I never post anything on church on Instagram. I made a decision not to do that. So if you like to watch me go running and skiing, go join Instagram. But our church, even that, Church of Hope in Umeå, if you want to find that out. But on any socials, I'm just a normal private person on any social media. I don't really engage too much.
Umeå is spelled U-M-E-A with a kind of funny...
Yeah, even if you wrote just U-M-E-A, you'd get it up.
Oh, great. So go check it. It's called Church of Hope, and you'll be able to see more of that. Rich, huge thank you for being with us.
No worries, man. Thank you very much.
There we have it, Richard Lewis, and that was really enjoyable for me to be able to sit and chat to him and just to hear his brain and heart combined together to work through what he's going to be doing with church is totally inspiring. And please do go check him out, send him a message or reach out to him. He'd love to be able to chat to a whole heap more of people that may be listening to this. And do reach out to me, let me know if you want me to speak to anyone. I've got a load of other people that are coming on this, and I'm really enjoying it. And I hope you are too. So have a great rest of your week.